Welcome back to Shatteramus. I'm your host, Dee Gutta. We're turning the page now and going to the Torah. This is really to the heart of the Torah. We're in the book of Shemot. Exodus means names in Hebrew. The 20th chapter, of course, begins by presenting the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone. We've talked on this program that not one of them is a commandment. They talk about the terms and conditions of the covenant. They provide instructions to us on how we best should live our lives so that we are happy, so that we are productive, so that we ultimately come to know Yahweh. That is the purpose of them. And so we were considering the first statement. It's actually the first instruction of the seven instructions that was etched on the second tablet. 77 words on the second tablet. The first one that dominates the second tablet, and yet it's the one that Christians completely ignore. Muslims also ignore it, claiming even though their God claims that he authored the Torah and that his Quran confirms the Torah, both of which are untrue. But imagine being lost in a religion, being one of those 3 million people that was camping out with the Pope this past Sunday. And yet you completely ignore the first of seven instructions that Yahweh, the one and only God, etched in stone. Remember the Shabbat, the Sabbath, the seventh day. It is set apart. It's special. It has all to do with setting you apart, me being set apart, you being set apart especially from religion. Set it apart from the ordinary. Set it apart from religion. Set it apart from politics. Remember the Shabbat, the seventh day. It's set apart. 6 days you can actually and continuously work, and you continually engage in the totality of your service, representing the messenger and proclaiming the message. This is the first work was Abad. The second was Malacca. Malacca is a derivative of Malak, which is spiritual or heavenly messenger or envoy. But the seventh day, the Shabbat of Yahweh, so Larry, another trick question here for you. When God says the seventh day, the Shabbat of Yahweh, your God, is it appropriate then to call the Sabbath a Jewish religious holiday?
No, not if you're willing, not unless you're going to acknowledge that the only persons that Yahweh is engaged with have to be Jewish. I mean, that would be the only way you could do that.
So you would you'd have to assume that the book of Yirmiyahu, where Yahweh says, "I'm writing this book to Gentiles, to non-Jews, to goyim."
Right.
This prophecy is, I'm writing this to goyim. And when he says throughout his revelations that his outreach is to goyim, every time that he says that, then you'd have to say we'd have to ignore all of that to say that no, he's only interested in Jews, and therefore he is simply the God of the Jews. Therefore, if that were true, by the way, Larry, who would the God be of the rest of the world?
But it'd have to be, it wouldn't be the creator of the universe. It'd have to be Satan himself.
Well, yeah, it'd be some other imagined candidate, right? Yahweh says that he's the only God, and so if he's the God of the Jews and you're a Gentile, and therefore none of this applies to you, and you're looking for a different God, who would that be? Well, the only way that you could claim, you could say, oh, that mother, our God is Jesus Christ. Well, then he can have no association whatsoever with Yahweh. And how, therefore, can he be God?
Jesus Christ doesn't have an association with Yahweh because, you know, we all know it was Yahusha, which means yes. Yahweh saves, and he was a diminished part of Yahweh. So they had to make up a sort of a cartoon character to create yes. a religion based on the right. life and times of Jesus Christ. And that's yep. what they did. But
and, of course, what's amazing, they ignore everything the man said and did. Everything that he said and did.
Absolutely.
They view him through this twisted prism of Paul, who never accurately quoted him. Never once.
I know, and then we have to throw in the fact that somehow the people who were the followers of the way, They for 300 years after this sacrifice of Mount Moriah, or roughly 300 years, they were meeting on Shabbat. Well, we still are today, but they were setting apart this seventh day. But yet we see right in history there, and we know Constantine worshipped the sun god Mithras, didn't he?
Right.
And his historian was Eusebius, and he recorded this in 321 CE. All things whatsoever that is the duty on the Sabbath, these I have transferred to the Lord's Day. The founder of Roman Catholicism called Sunday what? Sol Invictus Mithras. And that means the day of the unconquerable sun. And in this particular edict, he writes, under penalty of death, we decree that all within the empire must cease work on Sunday in honor of the sun god. Now, there it is.
Correct. There it is.
That's where suddenly we have Sunday worship of the Lord. And there are three things wrong with what I just said. One, Yahweh hates being called Lord. Two, there is no worship in the covenant. And three, this is all being done on Sunday. And I'll stop.
Yeah, Milton, let me add a fourth.
Yeah,
and that is that a military man, a political man, and a religious man, Constantine, imposed his edict above God's testimony. It is the nature of religion. Man imposes his views, his opinions, his desires over God's. And so every Christian that meets in a church on Sunday is still choosing to honor Constantine, a pagan general, a egotistical and self-serving politician, a manipulative, pagan worshiping, sun god worshiping religious leader. They're choosing to honor his view as opposed to Yahweh's testimony. That's pretty astounding. And that it continues to this day. And that Christians are unwilling, as are Muslims, to consider the evidence to the contrary. They prefer to be misled by men and human institutions than they are to know Yahweh and his truth. And that's why Yahweh says, you know, I'm not going to even listen to the prayer of those who are not Torah observant. If you're not willing to listen to God's perspective on this and you prefer the edict of Constantine, then I have nothing to do with you. I don't want to listen to you. Go babble to someone else. Your day of prayer, night vigil of prayer, I'm not listening to it. The seventh day, the Sabbath, is of Yahweh your God. In Hebrew,
you know,
the Hebrew says that it's forever. It is forever.
One of the other things that I'll point out is that even in a Christian Bible, even in a Christian book named after Biblios, the Son Goddess, with their Jesus Christ, he asks them, he says, how do you say you believe me and not do what I do?
Right.
And we see right in Yashayahu, the Son of Man strengthens, he establishes, restores, and renews. Right? And his power is steadfast. He carefully observes and keeps what? The Shabbat, the seventh day of rest.
Let me ask you a question, all right? Let me ask you a question here. The and I don't know which of the accounts it is found in, but there is the first public declaration that Yeshua made is not actually the Sermon on the Mount. There is one public declaration where he walks into a synagogue to make prior to his Sermon on the Mount. And in that declaration, it says, as was his custom, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath. As was his custom, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath. So, dear Christian, how is it possible that you are following your Jesus, let's just put that in air quotes, if you don't pay attention to God's testimony on the Sabbath? By the way, when he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath, why did he go into a synagogue? Was the synagogue material to this? No. We were told why he walked into that particular building. Why did he walk in there? Do you know?
No, I'm to teach them, I'm sure. You know.
to read from the scroll of the prophet Yeshayahu.
Okay.
He walked. He said, it says, as was his custom, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath, and he read from the scroll of the prophet Yeshayahu.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and what's interesting is what he read in, as was his custom, on the Shabbat. So if we want to observe the Shabbat correctly, and we want to use Yahusha as our example, then we too should read from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms on the Shabbat.
Right, so, as opposed to, say, going to a religious institution where people are paid and make a living in the religious business, right, and read from the letters of a man named Paul on
that's
Sunday.
Correct. Right. That's the distinction. You're going to
great opposition.
Right. You're going to on the Sabbath go in and listen to what God said in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh, and you're going to follow Yahusha's example in doing that, or you're going to disregard Yahusha's example and disregard Yahweh's testimony, and you're going to go into a building named after the sun goddess Shersh on the day that was named after sun gods, Sunday, and you're going to read from Satan's messenger, who was Paul. That's quite a choice, quite a distinction. And yet what we have is we have 2.5 billion people doing the latter and a few thousand doing the former. Pretty astounding.
Yeah, well, you won't even catch me in any religious institution, even a synagogue. I mean, today there are no religious buildings, and there never were religious buildings. There just are no religious buildings that represent
right.
Yahweh. Anyway,
do you know what he talked about? This is so few people actually study this particular statement, but you know what he talked about? The passage that he read from Yeshayahu relative to that, his first public announcement.
Enlighten me.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. What he did is he revealed that it was the Yobel year, and that he was a living manifestation of the Yobel. There's a passage in Yeshayahu that speaks of the importance of the Yobel, and my guess is there's not more than a few thousand people in the world today that know A, what Yobel means, B, know why it was discussed in Yah's testimony relative to the path that he has provided home, or why Yahusha spoke of himself being the embodiment of the Yobel. So welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the first public declaration that Yahusha made. It's one that helps emphasize the importance not only of the Shabbat, because we are told that as was his custom, he went into the synagogue to read the scroll of from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms on the Shabbat, setting the example we should follow. If Christians did that, they would cease to be Christians. It's impossible for you to follow Jesus, which is a misnomer, and not be Torah observant. It is impossible. So, and the moment you become Torah observant, you cease to be a Christian. Disproving Christianity is really as simple as that. Yahusha was resolutely Torah observant. And if you are not, you're not following him, you're not emulating him, you're not benefiting from him. This is what I told you, that Yahusha went in and made a declarative statement by reading from the prophet Yeshayahu on the Sabbath before his ministry began. The second speech was his largest and longest, which is the Sermon on the Mount. This is the section of Yeshayahu, and I'm going to sneak up onto it in context, that he read on the Shabbat. He says, the Redeeming One will come and enter Zion. Zion is means signpost along the way. It's a mountain in Yisrael, in Jerusalem. The Redeeming One will come and enter Zion. The Redeeming One is Yahweh, and through the diminished manifestation, also Yahusha. The Redeeming One will come and enter Zion, and will come to those in Jacob. Jacob was renamed Yisrael, so it's speaking of Israelites, who turn away from rebellion. So he's coming from those who for those who stop rebelling against Yahweh by being religious, declares Yahweh. As for me, this is my covenant relationship with them, says Yahweh. So this passage that Yosha cited addresses Yahweh's covenant and him coming as the Redeemer upon Zion, the signpost along the way, on behalf of Jacob, which is Yisrael, meeting with those who reject rebellion for the benefit of his covenant relationship.
Do you know where that's at in Yasha Yahu, by the way?
Yeah, it's that the first begins in Yasha Yahu, which is Isaiah 59, 20 and 21, and then we're going to go into the 60th chapter in a moment. The, you know, these chapter designations are a human construct. And he says, and my spirit will be upon you. So the set-apart spirit, the Ruach, will be upon you. And you here is Yahusha. He is the redeeming one, the manifestation of Yahweh saving us. My words, I will, by association and relationship, put in your mouth. In other words, the Torah and the prophets will be spoken by Yahusha. What did Yahusha do when he walked into the synagogue and read from the scroll? He read Yahweh's words. Yahweh's words were in his mouth. And they will not depart from the mouths of your offspring or your children's children, says Yahweh, from that time through all eternity. This is a affirmation that those, and this is actually now speaking not of Yahusha's arrival in year 4000 Yah, or at the end of the fourth millennium of human history to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah, but instead of his final return on the Day of Reconciliations, because he's saying that those who become part of the covenant family because they give up their revolt against Yahweh and embrace the terms and conditions of his covenant on that day, speaking of Yisrael, that they are going to have, according to Yahweh, they're going to have, and he tells us this in Yirmiyahu, we're all going to have the Torah written inside of us. So at that point, Yah's words, his Torah, will never depart those children of the covenant who return to Yahweh at that time because they're literally put inside of us. And he says, so Yahweh's words will never depart from them for all time through all eternity. Arise and stand up. Become light. For your light has come. Boy, powerful statement. You want to know what you're going to be like in eternity? God just told you right here. You're going to become light because Yahweh, our light, has come. And so we are going to be a spiritual energy manifestation, which empowers us at the rate of the square of the speed of light. An enormous insight in terms of our eternal nature. The glorious presence and manifestation of power of Yahweh appears, rises up, and shines like the light of the sun upon you. When Yahusha returns, what did he say? He says, when I come back, you're going to look up, and I'm going to look as brilliant as galaxies of stars. And so here Yahweh is telling us exactly what Yahusha spoke on the during his Olivet Discourse, that when he returns, he is going to appear as brilliant as the stars. He is no longer going to be a diminished manifestation, and that his very light will transform us, turning us into energy and light. We'll return after the commercial break to Yasha Yahu, considering the second and third verses of Isaiah 60. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering what Yahusha did, the first public declaration that he made. It's a death knell for Christianity because it is preceded by saying that, as was his custom, he observed the Shabbat. And he did so by reading Yahweh's words. And this is the passage that he directed our attention to. Now, this is the first thing that is recorded that he said publicly. And so this is what he is directing our attention to. And it's a prophecy regarding him that most of us do not know much about. It goes on to say, for behold and see, darkness and obscurity will cover the earth, and a thick and heavy cloud of gross darkness will conceal the nations and the people. And I'm going to just tell you what that means. Before Yahweh's return, on the Day of Reconciliations. The Earth will have been engulfed in a massive nuclear holocaust. We know that more than half of the world's population will have died, and that as a result of a combination of events, a volcanic mountain falling off into the sea, creating a massive tsunami, it'd probably take out most of the east coast of the United States, following an asteroid strike, which is most likely Apophis, and then a response to the Magog War, which is the Islamic war against Israel, that is being foretold now in these peace talks brokered by the United States, that the atmosphere of the Earth is going to be so thick that it's going to be like a cloud of gross darkness that's going to descend upon our planet that will be of our own making. And so that we do not totally destroy the Earth and wipe out all life from it, that is the time that Yahweh is returning. He says, but Yahweh shall rise and appear, shining like the light in your presence. So who is returning? Yahweh. It says Yahweh will return and appear like shining light in your presence. He's going to appear not dimmed down as he previously was in the corporeal form of a man. His glorious presence.
Zechariah Yod even says that. It says there will be no diminishment of his light on that day. That's what
correct.
It says.
Yes. And we'll be able to handle it because everyone that does not is not covered in Yahweh's garment of light and therefore resonates with Yah's light will instantly be incinerated upon his return. And that's just fine. That's the purpose of his return, is to get rid of the host of religion and politics and only have Yahweh's covenant children there. And so his light doesn't have to be diminished for him to exist with his spiritual children. His glorious presence and manifestation of power shall be seen in your presence and shall be upon you. The Gentiles, the Goyim, will come to your light and kings to the brightness of your dawning light. And so his return it is focused on Yisrael and the promises made to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob. It is also going to benefit some Goyim, some people from different races and places. Thank goodness, because, Larry, last time I checked, you and I are both Goyim.
Yeah, I'm half Jewish. We have a problem
okay.
here.
Okay, well, you're half Jewish, and I'm Sioux and Irish. If I was a Mormon, I would be partly Jewish because the American Indians, according to Joseph Smith, were Jews. Don't mind the DNA, but what the heck? Let's not let evidence get in the way of our religion.
That sounds
right.
That sounds kind of dumb.
It does, to quote the song. Then you will be radiant, and your heart will throb in reverence, swelling in joy. So we are going to become radiant, just like Yahweh. Whereas you are and have been forsaken and hated without Passover, I will direct you toward the everlasting triumph of being lifted up and to joy. And you will know that I, Yahweh, am your Savior. And I, Yahweh, am your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. I, Yahweh, am your Savior. What does Yahusha mean, Larry?
Yahweh saves, last I checked.
Who is the Savior, according to God?
Yahweh is.
Do you think God ought to know?
Yeah, I think he ought to know, and he's called, by the way, the Son of Man in Matanyahu. He's called Yahusha in the Dead Sea Scrolls and Yasha Yahu. Right. He's also called Yahweh and Yasha Yahu and Zechariah. So he's called in all three names upon the return.
Correct. So it says Yahweh, I am your Savior. I am your Redeemer. I am the Mighty One.
Therefore, by separating Yahweh from this mythical name Jesus Christ, what they've done is invented an entirely different animal.
Yeah, they have their own Savior. Their own Savior, unfortunately, is not related to Yahweh and therefore is a false caricature.
Can God die?
No. I will appoint salvation and reconciliation, shalom, to visit you. It will attend to you. It will look after you. It will care for you. And righteousness and innocence to approach and be present among you. So Yahweh is saying here, I myself, the guy that Paul said couldn't save, that was impotent, I am going to be the one that appoints salvation and reconciliation, shalom. I'm going to make sure that it attends to you, that it cares for you. And you're going to become righteous and innocent, tzedakah, vindicated, so that you can approach and be present. Injustice and wrongdoing will no longer be heard in your land, nor crippling oppression within your borders. When Yahweh returns, the entire earth returns to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. You will call Yahusha. And says, so
Yahweh
it's,
saves.
Yeah, Yahweh saves. You will call, you will invite, you will welcome, you will meet Yahusha. Isn't that interesting? So you will, Kara, you will summon, you will invite, you will welcome and meet your protector, your fortress and foundation, Yahusha. And you will call your doorway shining light. Is Yahusha as the Passover lamb, is he not the doorway to God's home, the doorway to life, the doorway, therefore, to light? Yeah. And you will call. So he says you're going to meet your protector, Yahusha, and you will call your doorway shining light, speaking of Passover. The sun will no longer exist as your light by day, nor for darkness the moon's light by night, for Yahweh is and will be your everlasting light. Your God will be your beautiful garment. That's the garment of light that we are given. Yahweh will be your everlasting light. I should just read this and let God speak for himself and not interrupt him. And then all people will all be righteous, vindicated, and justified. They will inherit and possess the land forever, and are the shoot that Yahweh planted, the deeds of my hand, and I will beautifully adorn them. I am Yahweh. At the right time, I will come quickly. Now, this is the passage that Yahusha is citing. The Spirit of Yahweh is on me, he said, because Yahweh has set me apart to serve, Bashak, thereby associated with me to bring and proclaim news to the unpretentious and sincere, to the responsive who will answer the call. He sent me out to encourage and to clothe. Therefore, the crushed, emotionally and brokenhearted, you could also read this as he sent me out to heal, bandage, and gird, accordingly to broken-hearted. And to call out to, and to meet, to invite, and to welcome those taken captive, to freedom and to liberty, and to release from darkness those who are oppressed. Affirming that's the purpose of the Torah, it's the purpose of Yahusha. The Torah provides liberty to those who are enslaved. And to call out and to offer an invitation, boy, Kara, which is the basis of Mikra, which are the very events that Yahusha fulfilled to make us acceptable. It's just repeated here over and over again. And to call out and offer an invitation, Allah Kara, to welcome you and call you acceptable and favored, Ratzun, pleasing and enjoyable, in the acceptable year of Yahweh. The acceptable year of Yahweh is the Yovel. That's what Yahweh makes absolutely clear to us in the Torah. Even the day of punishment of God to comfort and to change all who are sorry, all who are remorseful.
Of course, we know the Yobel is 7 times 7 plus 1. It's every 50 years. The next Yobel year is 2033. Right,
because Yahusha in a Yobel year of 4,000 Yah, which is 33 CE in our pagan calendars, Yahusha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shabuah in the Yovel year of 4,000 Yah, which is 33 CE. Recognizing the Yovel is 7 times 7 plus one. It follows the same pattern as does Bukurim, firstborn child into the covenant. That 40 Yobel, 40 times 50. 40 is the number of a completion of a period of trial and testing, of opportunity. 40 Yobel from 33 CE would be what year? What's 40 times 50?
2033.
All right.
That'd be two. Yeah.
That's 2033. He says he's going to return to reconcile his relationship with Jacob, which is Israel at that time. And he says he presents the conditions that exist on the earth at that time. It will be the conclusion of horrible wars and tragic national disasters and asteroid strike and large tsunamis and nuclear holocaust. He's coming back at that time. It will be 6:22 p.m. Israel time on the 2nd of October, the beginning of Yom Kippurim in 2033. If you want to know when he's going to return, that's when he's going to be there. Now, we're going to be there to watch this grand event, but not because we're living at the earth at that time, because Yahweh's covenant children, at least 7 years and maybe more from that time, will be harvested on Teruah. But we will be returning from our exploration of the existing universe to welcome him back to earth. And this is the very event that he is describing, as well as describing his role, how he is identified with and literally part of Yahweh in the process of saving us. And it is in that context that his words and deeds can be understood. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. This is the last segment of our program today. We're considering Yahweh's statement regarding the Shabbat and the fact that Yahusha followed the Shabbat, that Yahusha observed the Shabbat, that he was the living manifestation of everything that the Shabbat represents, and the statement that he made regarding him reciting what Yahweh had to say in Yahshayahu on the Shabbat, reading from Yah's testimony. So then we're returning to this statement, the first of seven instructions that Yah etched in stone. We find, and the seventh day, the Shabbat of Yahweh, your God, you should never actually engage in any part of the work of the heavenly representative or messenger. Now, why is God saying that?
Because you can't. You can't do any of the work.
Right.
He did all the work.
Because he's already done all the work. Provides you, let's say your dad provides you with a home. You know, you finally get your first job and you don't have any savings at this point. Your dad says, you know, I'm going to buy and give you a home. And as a son, rather than saying thank you, I really appreciate you giving this to me. What I want to do is I want to offer you $100. I mean, that would be insulting. And it's the same thing. God is saying, I've already done everything. I made the sacrifice for you and I to have our relationship reconciled and for you to benefit from every promise I have made. And what I don't want you doing is I don't want you pretending that you're making a contribution to this. You can make a contribution to our relationship, but you can't make a contribution to your salvation or anyone else's salvation. And no human institution, no military, no political organization can save anyone. That's what he's saying. I've already done it. That's why we read and why it was appropriate to read the statement from Yahshayahu regarding Yahusha, because God is saying, I myself have done this. I redeemed you. I saved you. I returned. I came to do these things. So he says, I don't want you doing that because I want you to recognize that the Shabbat, the day of where Yahweh settles our debts so we can settle with him, the day that we should consider his testimony regarding these things, it tells us that we ought to trust and rely on Yahweh for this. That's why the third requirement of the covenant is to walk to Yahweh and become perfect. And the second one is to trust and rely upon Yahweh. He's done the work. We just have to answer his invitation. And he says, I don't want you to do it, your son, your daughter, your male and female servants, your means of production, those visitors who are relationally in your home or property or community. For indeed, and this is again, Yahweh saying, I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. I lead by example. It's too bad that the Christians don't follow it. For indeed, in 6 days, Yahweh acted and engaged, preparing and producing everything associated with and completing accordingly the spiritual realm, the heavens, and the material realm, the earth, and the seas, and everything which relationally is in them. And he became completely settled, Nuach. If you want to understand the Sabbath, Nuach is the key. That's why it is put here. And he became completely settled, Nuach. God settles our debts so we can settle with him. The means that Yahweh used to exonerate us, to vindicate us, was that he himself paid the price. So he can be just, he can be honorable, he can be truthful, he can be dependable, and yet have a relationship with us. And so it is saying that God himself was settled. He settled our debts so we could settle with him during the Almighty's seventh day. When did Yahweh settle the primary problem that we have, which is our rebellion against him, our sin, our tendency to trust and rely upon human institutions, political and religious? When was that debt taken away from us and our account settled? What day was it?
Matzah.
And in the Yobel year of 4000 Yah, which was 33 CE, what day of the week was Matzah enabled
Shabbat
by?
It was on the seventh day.
Yes.
Because he was crucified, made the sacrifice on Friday, and then his soul entered, his nephesh, his soul entered Sheol for Matzah the next day. And that's described as far worse than the crucifixion,
yes,
if anybody can imagine that.
So if you make that connection, that Yahweh settled Nuach, our debts, on the Shabbat, which is what he says right here, and you equate that to what happened in the Shabbat during the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim by Yahusha, you come to a profound understanding, do you not? Our debts are settled by Yahweh because he fulfilled Matzah on our behalf, separating our souls from sin so that we could be vindicated and perfect in his eyes.